You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Welcome to this episode of the Business of Practice podcast, where we focus on the business and human sides of equine veterinary medicine. In this episode, we're going to talk with Dr. Ann Dwyer and Dr. Brad Dygert about their lives after their retirement from equine practice and the sale of their practices. I'm your host, Dr. Amy Grice, business consultant and former equine practice owner. The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you in 2025 by Care Credit. Dr. Ann Dwyer grew up in upstate New York, where she was active in the Limestone Pony Club. She earned a degree in biology from Mount Holyoke College and spent 1 year doing tumor immunology research at Upstate Medical Center. Prior to attending veterinary school and graduating from Cornell in 1983, she worked as a groom and exercise rider at several East Coast racetracks. Dr. Dwyer practiced at Genesee Valley Equine Clinic for the entirety of her career. She pursued her interest in equine ophthalmology with intensity, and in 2012 was named an honorary member of the American College of Veterinary Ophthalmology. She has lectured nationally and internationally and published multiple papers and book chapters on equine ophthalmology. Dr. Dwyer is active in organized veterinary medicine and served as the president of the AAEP in 2013. From 2019 to 2025, she served on the Council of Education for the American Veterinary Medical Association. She is currently vice chair of the Advisory Council for the Veterinary College at Cornell. In addition to serving on the Cornell's WIG committee that allocates funds for equine research, she is a member of the advisory board of the Flaum Eye Institute at the University of Rochester School of Medicine. Since retiring in 2022, Dr. Dwyer has enjoyed spending time traveling, kayaking, writing, practicing yoga, and playing the cello. Dr. Bradley Dygert obtained his Bachelor of Science degree in physiology from the University of California at Davis, after which he continued his education at UC Davis School of Veterinary Medicine, graduating in 1986. He then completed an internship at Equine Services, a large referral and ambulatory hospital in central Kentucky. He remained in Kentucky for 16 months, performing surgery with the Veterinary Laser Institute, a specialty practice utilizing laser surgery with an operating microscope, after which he returned to his home state of California in 1988 to be close to his family. He owned an ambulatory sport horse performance practice with his wife, Linda Reidgig, also an equine veterinarian, for over four decades. Dr. Dygert and his wife raised three children. His outside interests include skiing, tennis, and mountain biking. Welcome, Drs. Dwyer and Dygert. It's great to have you here with us.
Thank you very much. It's good to be here, Amy.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's fun to see all of the things that you enjoy doing when you have not been working. And I hope that you're having a chance to do all of those things more now. You've both had long and successful careers in equine veterinary medicine, and you were leaders in your fields. Tell us how you have refashioned that passion in your retirement. Dr. Dwyer?
Well, Amy, I'd like to not call it retirement, but call it rewirement. That to me says it all. And anyone that just listened to my bio has a general idea of what I've been doing. But I did develop during practice a secondary hobby job giving talks and writing. And as I approached retirement and had to think about managing money and philanthropy and that sort of thing, I started to think about maybe having a bit of a legacy and a mission, like you have a mission statement for your business. And I decided that my North Star was education. I'll talk about fun later on, but in terms of my free time, as my work schedule wound down, which really started when I was an AAEP officer, And then escalated when I did sell my practice and did kind of a step down as an associate for a few years. I accepted many offers to teach at national and regional conferences and to do focused education for individual practices, give talks at AAP. So I did education myself, and I did some writing, some book chapters, that sort of thing. And I participated in clinical research on genetics with colleagues from UC Davis, Brad. So, you know, it's a small nice world. I then also, as my time was really winding down, I got encouraged to apply for the Council of Education for the AVMA. And I just concluded that service last summer. That was a very, very intense job. So that almost was like having a job, and it was very rewarding, gave back to the profession, but is done now. And then I have continued in service roles that, again, follow my North Star of education. I work with the Dean's Advisory Council at Cornell, which is a lot of fun. That's my alma mater. And my optho interest extends to people as well. So I'm very involved with the Eye Institute at our local medical school. And really recently, just like we hear about access to veterinary care for animals, access to vision care is really important for people. So that's been a bit of a personal focus for me.
Wow. I wouldn't have expected anything different than leaning in and getting so many things done. It's I think when you've leaned in your whole life, it's hard to not want to lean in. How about you, Dr. Dygert?
Well, Amy, you know, I think we probably all feel the same way, that we're very fortunate to have a career that's both a passion and a pursuit of something that, you know, as a profession is just a fantastic thing. I loved what I did. Mm-hmm. So sometimes people ask me, well, why did you retire then? And retirement came to me at the right time in my life for all the right reasons. So it just worked out. But like Anne, I still have a passion for learning. I still go to meetings. I pore over all my journals, interact with colleagues, go to my old practice and stick my nose in it once in a while and try to put my finger lightly on the pulse of the practice to see how things are going and talk with the younger associates and staff in there. And it's fun to do. You know, the old guys got to show up once in a while to say, hey, how is everybody? I started taking classes at a local university here, and it's fun. It's mostly retired people, and it's a continuing education of a myriad of topics. I'm actually taking a topic right now on early man and the peopling of the world, migration patterns and things like that. And it's fun to learn. It's not veterinary medicine, but it's still learning. And I'm not taking any notes. I'm not taking any exams, but I'm learning just for the sheer joy of it. And I absolutely love it.
It sounds fantastic. I've seen some of the courses that are available. And I, you know, when I back off a little bit more and have more time, that's exactly what I want to do, is like, learn some of the things that would be super interesting. I've always been interested in history, and I remember one of my favorite courses at Wellesley was a course on the American Revolution using primary sources.
Oh, and nice.
Like all these years later, I still remember how exciting it was to take that course. So, yeah, I get it.
The Business of Practice podcast is brought to you by Care Credit. Care Credit keeps equine veterinarians at the heart of care by providing horse owners with simple, budget-friendly financing options. By helping to bridge the gap between costs and care, Care Credit supports healthy financial relationships between veterinarians and their clients. Clients have a flexible way to pay over time for all types of care, and practices get paid in 2 business days. It's a payment experience everyone can feel good about.
So the pressures and the time requirement of owning a practice are sometimes really significant, like when things blow up when you don't realize it. So how do you feel about having the newfound freedom from those kind of pressures? Have you found ways to have new pressure on you and new stress? Or are you mostly enjoying that freedom? Dr. Digert?
You know, it's funny you ask about newfound freedom because I have a lot of friends that are retired and I have a lot of friends that are not retired, but uniformly, everyone asks me about retirement. Are you okay, retirement? What are you going to do? What do you do with your time? Like they're afraid that it's not a positive thing. Mm-hmm. For me, it's a very positive thing. It's funny, I laugh when they ask because I assure them, A, I'm very good at retirement. B, I wonder how I have time to work. and see, I just reassure them, yeah, it's very good. We received some advice from our financial advisor who said, look, I retired at 67, I'm now 68. And he said, just beware that in his practice, a lot of people, when they hit 80, start traveling less, getting out less. It's a little bit harder. And he said, certainly there's outliers in those groups that people travel well into their 90s. And he said, but start spending some money, having fun, and doing things that are meaningful to you. And so consequently, we've started traveling quite a bit. And travel has been fun. Both my wife and I are explorers. We take our kids along whenever we can. And, you know, they're busier than us, the time. They're less flexible because of their jobs. But we do like to take them along. And for me, I'm into the physicality of equine practice. I've just always been a physical person. So I walk every day, I work out, I play tennis, I ride my bike, I hike. In the winter, we ski. And all of that takes some time. I help Linda. She volunteers in a marine mammal rescue group. So I periodically go with her to rescue a California sea lion that's sick or endangered. And but the best part is I'm now free to be available to my kids and my new grandson. And so, it's fantastic. So that's the best part, kind of the icing on the cake for me. You know, when you're younger, you're building a practice, sometimes you're just not there, as I'm sure mm-hmm. you both know. So that's the best part for me.
I have to ask you, what is the favorite place that you've traveled to so far?
Just did it. Africa.
Oh, what part of Africa? Africa's huge.
Africa's huge. We're in East Africa, Rwanda, Kenya, and we trekked up to see the mountain gorillas. We did chimpanzee trekking. We safaried all over Kenya. It was a huge trip, and it was a privilege and a pleasure, especially if you're animal people.
Yeah, absolutely. That sounds great. How about you, Dr. Dwyer?
Well, I talked about service roles in the first question, but I have to say the freedom of retirement is great. It's kind of like living your life in an off-leash dog park. You can spend time with your friends and you can get plenty of exercise. And like Dr. Digert, I have heard advice from financial people who describe the same thing. They say your life is going to be in three different phases. You're going to have your go-go phase, your slow-go phase, and your no-go phase. And so right now, I'm probably on the cusp between go-go and slow-go, and I plan on making the most of those, but also recognizing that the no-go may come one of these days. And as one leaves middle age, you realize that if you don't have your health, you don't have anything. So I would say I personally have a strong daily focus, just like Dr. Dygert, on the big four. Exercise. None of these things come in a pill bottle or anything else. They're all your free will. Exercise, nutrition, sleep, and your social connections. And I don't formally quantify it, but if I look at how my calendar runs, I'm usually spending about 2 hours on the exercise part of it a day. Not necessarily in a gym, but I do tons of yoga, walking, kayak in Florida all winter, biking, a little bit of strength. But I don't do it. It's fun. I love it. Equine practitioners, we're movers and shakers, and we got to keep moving and shaking. The nutrition part, eat real, the pollen, prescription of eating real food, mostly plants and not too much, that really starts to resonate more and more. And if I have some advice to the younger people, out there, start doing it now. I love to cook my meals, don't eat at very many restaurants, you know, just try to follow a reasonable diet. Bedtime's usually somewhere around 10 p.m. because I'm tired. And then I love waking up without an alarm, and that usually is around 6 o'clock. That's a delight. It's not like I'm lounging, but I'm not forced to get up at a certain hour like I was in practice. I live in a senior community that has all kinds of social activities, and it's really fun to be in a place where you can walk to a group dinner or a book club or whatever. But I would say the biggest thing is just fun. I'm in a long-distance relationship with another veterinarian that Amy knows, and he shares my passion for education, health, and lifelong learning. Between us, we have four different places to live, so we spend an awful lot of time just traveling to one place or another and juggling calendars. Love to travel and just very, very happy. I would say this is I've always been a pretty happy person, but I think retirement has found me at the happiest part of my life. And then one final thing, we're at a time when care for others may be something that we need to devote time to. And my mom is gone now, but one of the blessings of the step down period of working was that I had time to be her complete caretaker for the last 6 months of her life. And I wouldn't have traded that for anything in the world.
Good for you. That's very admirable.
Yeah, I think that those times, which sometimes are only a matter of months, are some of the most important things that we spend time doing. I took care of my dad in his final months, and I've always thought it was one of the best things that I ever did. I took time from work to do that, and it was a very special time. And Dr. Dwyer, I'm so glad that you brought up the point about not having to be woken up by alarm, to have the freedom to just wake up and decide on how you're going to spend the day. It's so great to just, and I wake up automatically at 5 o'clock, but I don't have to go anywhere. I can just drink coffee and read the news if I feel like it. It's so nice to not have to be anywhere. That kind of pressure is. Yeah,
don't mean exactly. To interrupt, but I still get up early, but I don't have to get out of bed. I can read.
I think that is one of the freedoms that means the most, you know, to most people, is not having that time constraint that you might still get up, but you don't have to go anywhere. You can decide. You get to decide what you're going to do. Yeah. So when one sells a practice, leaves practicing, there is a challenge in letting go sometimes of something that you've built, that you've nurtured, that you've been a part of for so long. What was the biggest challenge of letting go? Was it easier or harder than you anticipated? And both of you, now it's a few years. Is there anything you would have done differently? Dr. Dwyer?
Well, I have to say it was a pretty easy transition for me. And I was chatting with Dr. Dygert before this started. Both of us sold internally to people that we had worked with. And it was a very intentional and very careful process, but it was a reasonably easy one. And I really wouldn't have done much differently other than maybe studied the tax implications of when you sell a practice. Everything for my structure was good. I just was a little surprised at the tax bill I got the first year. And so the second year, I mitigated that bit with philanthropy, but that was fairly minor. I was really lucky to have a long-term business partner who you know well, who was very mm-hmm. interested in purchasing my half of the practice. And we really started planning a good 5 years in advance. Though the advice of our accountants and attorneys was important and necessary, the transition really depended on good communication between we as partners and a really strong established partner framework. We ran our practice well. We were in a business management group. We learned how to do things right. We did things right. We had policies. We didn't try to do any funny business. And that was a good foundation. Our employment policies were good. And it was important for us to make the big decisions as partners and as future buyer and seller with candid conversations, and then basically give our decisions to our professional advisors, particularly the attorney and the accountant, and let them execute it, not let them tell us what to do. I did transition to being an associate once the transfer was made, and since I had employed associates for 20 some years, I knew what their role was and I just stepped right into it. I didn't try to get any favors as being a former owner or anything like that. I made sure I had oars in the water on the days that I worked. Every year for 4 years, I worked a little bit less. But when I was on for a day, I made sure that I took my share of emergencies and tough calls. In fact, maybe even pushed to take a few more of those to make sure that it was smooth. And I stayed completely out of the finances and administration as soon as the taxes were filed after we filed our sale papers. But I did remain open for advice if my successor asked me for anything. And once I was no longer working at all, I live some of the year just a few miles away from the practice. So I'm still friendly. I still actually own the real estate, but it's totally an arm's length deal. I have a formal lease. I always had a formal lease. We just abide by the terms of the lease, stop in and get my mail periodically, and then leave. I absolutely stay out of things. And it's really been rewarding to see the practice expand, and it's actually grown a lot since I left. There were changes that the new owner made that instantly made it more profitable and bigger, and bravo to her. But the culture of service remains strong, and it's been fun to see her steer the boat in her own way. And I'm happy to chat with her from time to time and hear what's going on and say, I'm sorry you're having to deal with X, Y, or Z, but I don't step in and the dealing. So that's my answer. It was really pretty easy.
That's wonderful. I think the planning ahead makes a difference. But one of the things you said really resonated. I wanted to jump up and down and emphasize that when you made decisions with your partner and then you told your professional advisors, this is what we want, and they implemented it, because it's too easy to be steered in directions that maybe you didn't want to go in some cases, and you made sure that didn't happen. So,
yeah, and there's a lot of resources now that you can study. And Amy, quite frankly, you provide a lot of those resources. It's not rocket science. If we can understand acid base, we can.
I know. We're pretty smart.
And all you have to do is just read about it and practice what gets preached and know your own mind. Be strong. Yeah.
Right. How was it for you, Dr. Digert? You had a somewhat similar experience, an internal sale.
Yes, very similar. A lot of Anne's comments are similar to my own. I sold internally to someone that I had known since they were a kid, literally. Watched them grow up, watched them, you know, through high school, through college, through veterinary school, through internship, and postdoc training. And it was a great sale. I would say the only thing was we also had a friendship. She was kind of like my second daughter. So you got to be careful conducting business with family, so to speak. But it actually went very smooth. I think it was a good endeavor for both parties all along. It's ironic because you bring in new blood to bring in fresh ideas and vitalize the practice and invigorate it and, hey, do this. And then sometimes I go, why did you make that decision? And I think that reflects more poorly on me than on her, only because it was a decision I might not have made, but yet she had the strength and fortitude to make these decisions. And consequently, our practice has expanded. It's grown. There's more staff, more veterinarians. She's done a remarkable job. And I'm, you know, like I said, my second daughter, very proud of her. She's doing a fantastic job with this. It was fairly easy for me. It was easy because it was planned out. I mean, planning was everything to that. And I honestly think, Amy, I wouldn't do anything different. I was fortunate, like Anne, to work part-time for a couple years, which was amazing. And then after those couple years, I stepped back, which was last July of 24, completely. My wife still works in the practice as an associate, part-time. She can work as little or as much as she wants. So it gives us flexibility and freedom to travel and, you know, pursue things that we like to pursue. So it's been a very positive experience.
It's wonderful to hear. And I think it's probably easier when you do stay for a little bit instead of one day being full bore and then one day not. When I sold my shares and left my practice to start doing business management and, you know, I was feeling evangelistic about bringing all the things I'd learned to other veterinarians, it was still a jarring sort of, you're a clinical practitioner one day, and then the next day you're not. That was a little jarring. So my guess is that staying on a little bit was a helpful way to ease your way out of that amazingly great life that being an equine practitioner is. You know, absolutely. Like you said, you love it. And I used to say, I love my job so much, I could love a little less of it. You know? But I loved it, right?
And it helps with the client shock as well to stay on and, you know, kind of ease them into what's happening.
Yes. Yeah. You know? Right. I agree wholeheartedly. Are there any words of advice or encouragement that you would like to share with practitioners that are nearing retirement, getting ready? Dr. Digert?
Well, again, I think my trajectory and Anne's were very similar. I can say plan, plan, plan. Look ahead. I started 4 to 5 years out, and I had help in the planning, namely you, Amy. But starting way ahead of time, I was glad I did that because it's not a fast process if you do it right. Gather a team of advisors, both practice advisors, attorneys, your accountants, and like Anne said, don't let them push you around. This is how we're going to do it. This is the deal we've hammered out between us. Make this happen, and then we'll all be happy. The other advice I'd give to people is think about what you want in retirement. Do you want to gradually phase out? Do you want to run screaming for the hills? Do you, you know, what do you want to do? Just consult part-time? Do you want to travel? Or family time, hobbies, volunteerism, of course. And I think you need to start thinking about it years, many years out. It shouldn't be a sudden decision, because I think if it's going to be a sudden decision, that's probably made under duress, and it's not going to be what you wanted to do. And sometimes that happens because of someone's health issues or financial issues. But if you are able and to plan ahead, that's my advice. Endless planning.
And it's very good advice, I must say. What about you, Dr. Dwyer?
Well, your question was directed towards people that are approaching retirement, but I'm going to dial it back just a little further and give the advice that I give whenever I go to Cornell and talk to the students or go to wherever, and there are young practitioners there. What I would say, because we all have a mission in life, and that mission is, I can't tell you what yours is, because everybody who's listening to this has a different one, but it's wonderful if you can feel like you're executing your life with purpose. And in terms of being in practice, I think it's very helpful if you identify a niche within your practice. And of course, you may have to do everything as an equine practitioner. But in my case, I had two niches, sort of. I pursued opto, and I pursued knowledge, learning about business. And that really has made a tremendous difference. And there's a zillion niches out there. There's dentistry, there's podiatry, you name it. But I think it is wise, because it will help you as you make your transition later in life, whether it's retirement or maybe even you might have a challenge like a disability. So carve your own way. That's my first thing to say. We hear a lot about boundaries nowadays, and I'm all for that. Absolutely. But it's also important to say yes to certain things that really, really call to you and can contribute to the greater good. So choose carefully. I would advise everybody, no matter what phase of their career they're in, to concentrate now on your health and your money management. It's really easy to put those things off. But whether you're an associate or an owner, you're going to need those things as you age. And I talked about the big four of exercise, nutrition, sleep, and social connections. And the media is full of all kinds of advice about improving all those things. And it's not just lip service. Do it now. Practice good ergonomics. Equine practice is a tough, it keeps us healthy, but it can hurt us too. It's not enough just to lug the x-ray machine around. Do some kind of an exercise program. It's so easy to buy junk food on the road or Lean Cuisines or whatever, HelloFresh. It doesn't take very much time, and it takes a whole lot less money to cook your own food. And sleep, well, we all know that can be hard in our line of work, but understand it is a priority. Get what you can. And your social connections, you want to set reasonable boundaries so you have the time for your family and your friends. And it's going to take effort to connect. But it's also going to really support your mental health, which will help with your happiness. Let's see, money. I have a few notes here. Learn all you can about saving for retirement, investing, managing those big life decisions. And I'm sure there's going to be people that are going to say, okay, boomer, when they hear this, but it's hard to live below your beneath your means. It really pays off in the long run. I won't say anything more about that. If you're an owner, invest in the infrastructure of your business. Listen to Dr. Amy Grice with all of her great advice about how you construct policies and create a culture, and follow that advice. Be consistent and take the long view, and use your professional advisors to do things the right way. It'll just set you up for success when you do make a transition. And study business valuation. You should always have at least a little bit of a thumbnail idea of what your practice is worth if you're an owner, and figure out what's happening. Equine practice is in flux as far as whether corporate owners are interested in it or not, and that's going to change as time goes on, but pay attention. And if you're an associate, I'd encourage you to consider being an owner or being in some kind of a management position. It will allow you a stronger financial freedom as the years go on. I think that's my laundry list there.
And it's a good one. And it's filled with things that really make a lot of sense. And, you know, I can remember back when I was in the thick of it and my kids were little and, you know, just having time to go ride my horse like a couple of times a week was like the lifeline that kept me going. And that would be my advice, that even when your life feels a little overwhelmed with all the things that you have to do, make sure to carve out time to do the things that fill your cup, that give you great joy. And even now, though I'm very busy, I have a 4-year-old quarter horse filly that I'm, you know, riding a fair amount now. She's green. I go to the trainer and it's pretty fun. And what you said about ergonomics, I'll tell you what, equine practice, every place you got hurt when you were younger starts to, even though it healed for a long time, it starts to hurt when you get older. Yeah, there's all these extra places that let you know when it's too humid outside, when it's, So it happens that way.
I'd like to add to Ann's comments about the ergonomics and all that. I pummeled my knees with equine practice, skiing, and tennis, and so I got them replaced. And every morning when I get up, I still do my physical therapy exercises of, you know, stretching and all that. And that's in addition to anything else I do in the day of workout or, you know, walking. It's important.
Yeah, it's amazing. You don't realize when you're young and you take all of that for granted, that you're always going to be able to, like, you know, just do all the stuff. You have to use it or lose it, for sure. Yeah. No doubt. I want to thank you too so much for joining us today. It is, it's been a really fun time having this conversation. And I really want to thank both of you for being here.
Well, thank you, Amy, for everything you're doing for the profession. You're a real linchpin in equine practice management, and we appreciate you.
I agree. We do. You've helped a lot of practitioners out there, ones you know about and ones you don't. So we appreciate you. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I want to make a difference, and it's good to hear that I am. It's a good way to feel. Thank you all for listening to the Business of Practice podcast today, and a big thanks to our sponsor, Care Credit. And to all my listeners out there, be brave, embrace change.